Well, hello, witches. We are back, and we are bringing you night two of the Sacred Space Conference that happened outside of Baltimore earlier in April, where myself, Blackbird, and my good friend Scarlet, we recorded live together. It was very exciting. And day two was really fun. We had a lot of variety of experiences. So I hope you enjoy, and thank you as always for listening.
In the same room. It's the greatest.
Let's never be apart again.
I mean, I think you'd get real sick of that.
I think you would get sick of it too.
I mean,
I think
we're fine.
Listen, I'm the onlyest of children. I need the alone time.
I also do. It is true. We are we are good trip mates, though.
We are.
I am Blackbird.
I am Scarlet.
This is Hex Rated.
Coming to you live from Sacred Space Conference in north of Baltimore.
North of Bridge Collapse area. Yes.
I've had a lot of people ask me about that.
If we're okay.
We're not near it.
No, no.
So we are fine.
We are not.
We're traumatized about bridges, but I was already scared of bridges.
I was fine until this. I used to make fun of my mom. That's how cool I am. That's not very nice, is it? No. No, it's not.
Oh, I'm super mean to my mom, so I'm not the person. Speaking of people acting like moms, I woke up in the middle of the night to go pee, and Blackbird, out of the darkness, was like, hey, did you turn off the space heater at my house? Okay, because guess what? We are now like over 12 hours removed from being at her house, and it's the middle of the night, and there's not anything we can do about it now, but she furnished me with a delightful little oscillating kind of space heater guy for her basement guest room. And it was perfect. It maintained a pleasing temperature.
Fantastic.
But as someone who takes advantage of the space heater for difficult to heat homes, I did in fact turn it off, and I even unplugged it because my grandmother died in a fire.
Oh shit!
So
I did not know that.
My dad. This was in 1968.
Okay.
So I wasn't, you know, present for the trauma.
No.
But I was present for my dad being super paranoid every night.
Yeah.
To make sure that all my candles, incense, the stove that we'd used maybe less than once a week, all of it was off. So anyway, yes.
I also had a very paranoid mother. So I knew that you had space heater experience, so
I just love that you were like thinking about this for the 3 hours I was asleep.
Oh, I totally
until I had to get up and pee, and you're like, hey.
Out of the dark, like a crone, just like, hey, like I wasn't.
You're like, I've just been silently in the dark.
Like, I wasn't giving you any wisdom.
Like,
out of
just
the depths. Just fucking just, questions.
Just having these feelings of foreboding, imagining your house up in flames.
I literally was gonna call my husband, but I thought that would be very bad at 3 in the morning. He would not be happy. He'd be like, because, A, if you had left it on, he'd be real mad, and then he wouldn't also be able to go back to sleep. But, like, that, I figured you had turned it off, so I was not gonna call him first. This is a long rant about a crazy woman, and
what
that is me.
Here are some more things that made us crazy today. Do you want to hit it?
Oh, yeah, we should hit it. Okay, well, we can start with breakfast.
Oh, my God.
Breakfast at the hotel. Okay, look, all I have to say is we have gone to Pantheacon many times. You have gone to other things at hotels. I've gone to work conferences. I have never seen a hotel as ill-prepared for a conference as the one we are in currently. I will go ahead and not name it.
You can look it up.
You can find out.
It's easily...
Yes, easily found outable. But, okay, so we go down to breakfast, which is a buffet, which is not free. And right off the bat, there are
no plates,
not a lot of tables, and yes, no plates.
So there's just a line of people waiting to like get in line,
yes,
to go to the buffet.
Yeah. I mean, the offerings on tap were okay, except until we get to the syrup.
Oh my god. So for some reason they were like, it'll look fancier if we have the syrup in a heated chafing dish. You know what? That was a terrible idea, because it was just like fake maple corn syrup that was like boiling off and is now a like
like a viscous,
a super viscous, like a floor varnish or something, like super super viscous,
like the thickest syrup of your imagination,
and really 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 sticky, not just thick but like glue like it's like half dried Gorilla Glue. And also, apparently, this process of, like, overheating it also makes all the flavor go away.
Oh, no.
So
it's just, like, eating paste or something? Like, gluey...
Yeah.
Gluey floor varnish.
Slightly sweet. Ugh, like, yeah. Barf.
Yeah, that's not great.
So I was like, okay, well, nope.
That sucked. So Scarlett was probably hungry. But then, you know, whatever. We powered through. Let's get to the meat of this situation. I mean, I know you're a vegetarian, but let's get to the meat.
Yeah.
All right. What did you start with today?
My first stop this morning was a talk called The Hare and the Moon. And it was about hare lore. It was put on by a person named Raven. They are from Somerset in England, so they had a delightful accent. They live basically within viewing distance of the Glastonbury Tor. So that sounds very magical indeed. This was basically of the structure of a variety of, like, biology facts. This person is, in fact, a biologist. They studied it, and now they do it.
A biologist.
That is how you conjugate that.
Yes.
From a abstract noun to a occupation.
All good.
Anyway, so there were several interesting facts about hares that I didn't know. And then the sort of impetus for talking about this, and specifically the hare and the moon, is in the 1662. Hey. Isabel Gowdy was a very famous Scottish witch. She was tried for witchcraft and burned. But what's interesting about her is she confessed several times, and it was very thoroughly documented. And her confessions are super detailed. They involve a lot of chants and like kind of spells. And for the most part seem to be unprompted, as opposed to other witch trial transcripts where it's basically someone is being tortured until they're like, yeah, I totally went and consorted with the devil. And they're like, what'd you do? And they're like, I don't know.
Danced and got naked.
Yeah, and then they just are making stuff up. Yeah, you know, typical false confession shit, right, where it's obvious that you are being directed to say a certain thing. So that... that account has been of interest to people of late, doing sort of either reconstruction of folk beliefs from that era, or, you know, that are interested in making maybe kind of a fictitious but mythological folklore inspired type of witchcraft from the late Middle Ages, early Renaissance, that is based on this imagining of the witch. So anyway,
nice.
She has a very cute little poem about going into the form of a hare and going to the devil's sabbat. So I could list out a whole bunch of rabbit facts at you, but I won't. They do go 45 miles per hour.
Oh, what? What?
It's really fast.
That's the fastest thing.
But they're real fucking fast, as advertised.
Yeah, right?
True. I like this. The presenter, they were saying that you know, some good places to view them. Apparently, they're all over the Dublin airport.
And really?
I wrote a note to myself that said airport, more like hairport.
Oh my God, Delahere. Delahere.
Delaware. Delahere.
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 Stop it. Okay. That's amazing. All right.
So then, so after the rabbit facts, there were some interesting rabbit myths versus reality of why certain things are attributed to them.
Ooh.
So, for example, rabbits and hares can lactate and be pregnant at the same time.
Whoa.
So when they are brewing up one batch of bebes, they can be like feeding current batch of bebes.
Oh my gosh.
So that babies. That definitely contributes to their mythologies in terms of being very fertile and whatnot. And their one myth is that they tend to mate and procreate in the month of March. And because they live in meadows and hedgerows, the reality of that myth is they're actually breeding all year round. It's just March is the time where fields are still a little bit bare, so you can actually see them.
Because
then once spring gets rolling and it's summer, then the grass grows too high. So I thought that that was interesting. The other one was hares, which are much larger than bunbuns, little rabbits. We don't really have big hares here in North America.
They're big. Yeah.
They're quite large, but they will box. Like, they'll jump up and fight each other.
Oh, fun.
And so the myth was, originally, we thought for a long time, that it was males fighting over females. No, it's females fighting males being like, get the fuck off me, I'm not into this.
See?
So,
fuck.
That is some human bias.
Where's that?
By some guys that don't deal with rejection well. projecting that onto rabbits.
Oh, rabbits. Anything else that you gleaned from? Was there any kind of little, like, how to magic with them, or?
Honestly, not really. Okay. Some tips and tricks of, you know, like, you know, explore your local geography. Or they were really big on, instead of leaving actual offerings, doing kind of acts of service and stuff.
Mm.
So, for example, you know, doing something of environmental benefit to the area.
Right.
For example, I didn't realize this, but in certain parts of England, hare poaching is a really big deal. And it's deeply tied to organized crime.
What did people want
hares
for? Like their pelts or something?
Are well, we I think 1500s? Meat and pelts What's and happening? Stuff. But yeah, because poaching is illegal, the whole industry of poaching hares on private property is under the auspice of organized crime. So it's actually quite a big deal.
Wow.
So one thing that this person does is he walks along hedgerows and makes sure that there's not spaces where clearly poachers have cut through to get in and things like that.
A literal hedge walker.
Yeah, that's literal.
Wow. Fantastic.
So that's kind of cool. And then the talk kind of wound down with a guided meditation of using the Isabel Gowdy chant and then imagining you're a hare.
Oh.
I'm gonna be real. I almost fell asleep with my eyes open, which is more of a statement about my level of consciousness than like a comment on how invigorating this guided meditation was. But some things that I thought were interesting is it wasn't just like, imagine you're a rabbit, you have little bunny ears, and you're hopping about down the bunny trail.
Was it like you're looking in a blade of grass?
You know, you see the moon. What does a rabbit say to the moon? What does the moon have to say? What would the moon have to say to a rabbit?
That is so esoteric.
I know, but I thought that was a really...
I can't go there that early in the morning.
I know, but...
That was at 10 a.m.
Yeah. So that was kind of cool. An interesting thought project, and I definitely liked... that concept. So if I ever write my own pathworking or do like a shape-shifting thing, preparing it with questions
like
that are gonna help you kind of get into that headspace but aren't so literal, that are like gets you out of that anthropocentric idea of like thinking and being and talking like a human. And so, like, what would the moon say to a rabbit? I feel like the moon would definitely say something different to a rabbit than it would to me.
Sure.
Yeah, and then the follow-up question is, what would the moon say to the witch inside the rabbit?
Wow.
What?
Stop inceptioning me.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's really, what a cool concept.
Yeah.
I like asking questions rather than... I don't know.
Answering them?
Hello, rabbit. I mean, you know, just be like...
Little bunny foo.
You're a bunny. Happen. Do you want to ping pong this? I think that's a good way to do this.
Yeah,
so my first thing of the morning was Hecate, tarot, and boundaries. What a wake up to start the morning. Well, so it's been a whole day of Hecate for me. So it started out early. By me not bringing a tarot deck, even though this class is called Hecate, Tarot, and Boundaries. There was nothing in the notes that said bring a deck, but I guess I should have just intuited that shit.
That is not what I would have guessed either. That was not the impression I got from reading it, so you're not crazy.
Well, it's lucky that we're just in the same hotel, because I came upstairs, grabbed my deck, and went back down. So this was taught by a woman named Cleo... I think it's Ajana, but it might be Ahana. It's A-J-A-N-A. And she is a Hecate devotee. She is in the Hellenic Alexandrian witchcraft and spiritual tradition. She ministers to prisons. She writes a column. She's also a death doula. She is a very interesting person and very... charismatic. Mm. Yeah, super, like, great energy. I really was such a refresher after the thing we went to last night that I was kind of bummed about until the end, that this was a great, actually great way to wake up. So,
best part of waking up
is a cate in your cup. Oh, Lord. Oh, okay. So that happened just now.
That reminds me. This is a complete non sequitur.
Please do.
One time, Christina Aguilera was on Jimmy Fallon, and he does a game called a Wheel of Musical Impressions, and they give you a random person to impersonate.
Yes.
And then a thing to sing.
Yes.
And he had Christina do Cher singing the Folgers song.
Oh, my God.
She was like, the best part of waking up.
Did she do it well?
Yeah, she nailed
it. Sure.
She
I'm
nailed
sure.
it.
I need to look that up, because I'm
it's
sure
pretty
that's
fucking
fantastic.
Funny. So now I always hear that in Cher's voice.
Yeah.
But continue, please.
That's okay. So this class was described with basically, we're going to use tarot with a series of questions or basically Hecate-leaning type introspection questions to kind of ask and receive with your question of the tarot. So she had us pull the moon card out completely out of the deck before we even shuffled.
Okay.
Because that, she was like, this is your signifier, period. This is going to be your signifier. So we pulled the moon card out, then, you know, shuffly shuffle while she's talking. While I am shuffling and while she is talking, I am really trying hard to pay attention. She's casting a circle. She's talking about the elements, which, you know, I don't feel like I need that. I understand why people do it in things like this, but it was like, I'm trying to concentrate on what she's saying. I'm trying to be mindful of the circle and whatnot. In my head, there is a voice that is like, you know me. like kind of like the fucking Bene Gesserit voice.
Yes.
Like, you know me. This is okay, but you don't need this. I was like, whoa, we haven't even started yet. And she was like, I am beyond gender. Because she was talking about something about like some of the elements, the east, west, the coordinates representing masculine, feminine, mm-hmm. like honoring the fathers, honoring the mothers. And that's when it was just like, I am beyond gender. I am beyond circle.
Oh.
And I was like, I know. I was like, I didn't know if I should be like, I wasn't scared. And I wasn't like. Like, she wasn't like trying to sit me down. I think she was just saying, like, it's fine that you're here, don't, like, and you can take it for what it's worth, but this is not what you and I are about. That's how it felt.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I obviously did not hear the voice in your head. No. And I was not there, but it seems like it's more like, don't get pejiggity about trying to give your undivided attention to all these details.
Yes.
And balance it. And, like, don't stress yourself out trying to memorialize this in your brain for later, because this is not...
Well, and it wasn't like I felt that she was saying this person or the person giving the lecture or giving this example is trash. That was not the case, and I didn't get that feeling. It was just like, it was almost like my mom chastising me for reading under my level in kindergarten. Which, thanks, Mom. You kind of wonder why I'm fucked up. There you go. You know, it was like, you're older than Dr. Seuss. You know? So it was kind of like, you don't need to be here. It's okay that you are, but you just don't need this.
It's okay that you are. It's just a giant waste of your time. But I'm just kidding.
No, but it didn't even really feel like that.
No. I'm totally joking.
Like, it was almost, no, I know, but it was like a way of her saying, I am now reasserting myself in your life in case you haven't fucking noticed. It was kind of like that.
Yeah.
And I heard it loud and clear. So some of the questions that we were to kind of focus on, or we needed to decide on a question that we were going to ask the tarot. And here were the choices of questions given this actual exercise. For the north, where are your boundaries set in stone? For the west, where do you feel anxious? For the south, where do you radiate strength? And for the east, where do you chastise yourself internally with negative self-talk? Well, I picked, so out of those, choose one. And I picked something that is completely not my nature. I picked, where do I radiate strength?
Oh, nice.
Because I kind of looked at all of the other ones and I was like, oh, I need to ask this. Like, no. That's not the question I need to ask, because those questions I can already answer for myself. And I can answer the radiate strength question too, but like, I need to focus on it, because I'm focusing on all the shit that I don't do and not what I actually do.
Well, and I feel like so much traditional talk therapy, but also shadow work, I mean, it tends to focus on, you know, identifying things that are stressors for you or that make you anxious, or patterns that you have that are not serving you anymore.
Right.
Or, and it's not a lot of like building yourself up.
Right.
I mean, just by the nature of...
You're basically deconstructing yourself.
Right. But, you know, you're identifying things that aren't going well so you can make them better.
Right.
But, so it totally makes sense that that's often the focus, but...
Right. Right.
You know, a lot of times we neglect to build ourselves up. Aries, we don't have that problem at all.
No.
But I guess other people do.
Other people might suffer.
Other people that are not as cool.
So here is what the, when you lay out your cards, here is what the cards represent. I will give you the card description, like the, what it will signify, and then I will tell you my card. And I will do that in that order.
Okay.
So
lay it on me.
First card, card one.
Spread them.
North. I love it. What restricts me that I am resisting? Or what restricts me / what am I resisting? My card was the Emperor.
Huh.
Why, huh? That's so obvious to me.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just interesting because you're the Empress.
Yeah. Oh, well, I didn't even think about that. No, that was not what I was thinking about. I was thinking about I don't know if this is where do I radiate strength, but what restricts me in radiating strength is my...
The patriarchy?
Well, that, of course. I mean, that literally. But honestly, I don't feel like I am an authority, or I don't feel like I have certain expertise, which...
That is not true, but yes, can of pennies.
Right, exactly. No, I know that.
Yes.
Like, I get... Right, exactly.
Yes,
and,
okay.
And it's not necessarily true in my professional life. I know I have authority there, and I know I'm fucking smart. But I think it's like other shit that I would rather be doing than my actual shitty job. Like writing, like talking about witchcraft, like talking to other people about witchcraft rather than just you and me on a podcast. Hello, infinite abyss. You know, the people that are listening, like, it's a one-sided conversation. I mean,
greetings, voidlings. Voidlings. Oh, voidlings. My God. Can the voidlings be our listeners?
Yep. We just made that. Voidlings. So anyway, so I have a problem in questioning my own leadership or questioning my own, doubting my own authority.
So yes, 100%.
That is 100%. Okay, card number two, or West. Where can I expand my horizons? Well, guess what I got there. It was the Ace of Wands reversed. So to me, that was like, you already have the spark.
Do the thing.
Do the thing. Like it's been telling.
Hey,
dude.
Sarcastic tarot cards are sarcastic. Is gonna sarcasm.
I actually
on
said
you.
That to everybody in the room, and everybody laughed. It was a good humor moment. But yeah, I mean, it gets more sarcastic if you want to know.
Yeah.
Okay, card three, South. What realities must I face? Well, what suit do you think this was?
Wands?
Nope.
Earth?
Swords?
Swords, okay.
Swords. It was the Nine of Swords.
Oh.
Reversed. So
your own out of control anxiety of bolting upright in bed and being like, hey, did you turn off the space heater?
You guessed it. Worry. Yeah.
Because in the Rider-Waite or Rider-Smith deck, it's literally someone bolting upright. There's nine swords in the background hanging over them, and they've bolted upright from a dead sleep in the middle of the night of darkness, and they're just, like, bawling.
Oh, my God. It's so perfect. How did I not see that? Because I was...
That is hilarious.
What I had was I had the Mythic Tarot with me, and that picture is, like, swords coming out of the clouds... And the little guy on the ground, like, grabbing his ears like the scream.
Oh, my God.
So, like, I was thinking about that. And I was actually thinking about more, like, the picture and thinking, you know, I think I, I forgot the question already. What realities must I face? Like, I think I am, I don't want to, well, obviously what I just said. I don't really want feedback from others. Like, all of this is coming around to writing, right? Like, this is the big thing that I am procrastinating about and have been since my mom died, basically. Like, I have all this shit I want to write, and I'm just not doing it at all. So, worrying about rejection, worrying that it doesn't go anywhere. Why is that a worry? Who cares? Just write it.
Well, it's not going anywhere right now if you're not doing
sure
it.
Isn't. That's absolutely true.
No, that's interesting because with a lot of the Swords cards, because they have so much to do with depression or anxiety, feeling constricted, you know, I'm like, this card can mean real or imagined anxiety.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's so powerful that it doesn't matter if it's real or imagined.
Exactly.
And knowing that it's imagined actually doesn't necessarily do anything to make you not feel that way.
Yeah.
So, which I think is an important thing for people to remember because they're like, oh, I'm so stupid. Why was I worrying about that? But, like, it's a train that once it gets going, like, you can't just... jump the track.
It's the silver bullet, dog. It's bringing Coors to your town, whether you want it or not.
What?
You've seen it. People all over the world.
Silver bullet.
Join hands. It's the love train. I mean, basically, once the worry train has left the station, it's hard to stop. It's like that movie with Denzel Washington.
Oh, that's so good.
It's
Unstoppable? Is it called Unstoppable?
Not Unbreakable.
No. Him and Captain Kirk,
yes,
and they're on a...
Yes.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so good.
It's and really good.
Sandy Bullock? No.
No.
Oh,
that's Speed.
Dawson. No, Dawson. What's her name?
Rosario
Dawson. Yes, she's the station controller. She's the badass.
It's a really
good
movie.
It's a good movie. Okay.
It's probably my favorite train movie.
Yes, I can say it's probably the only train movie I've ever... Well, no, because there's the...
Train to Busan.
Yeah, that was really good.
It is really good.
That's a good one.
Snowpiercer.
I liked that.
And Polar Express.
Whatever the... What was the... Nope.
Murder on the Orient.
Nah, I liked that. The one with Brad Pitt where he's just getting beat up in the train all the time.
I haven't seen that one. But
it was all right. It was a lot of being beat up. All right. So, anyway, worry train, climb on board. That's all I have to say. Last card, East. Card 4. Where is my energy lacking? Yet another sword. Imagine it is the 7, like a little guy sneaking away. I'm running away from my own.
I'm a little sneaky snake.
Sneaky snake. I am running away from my own fortune, I guess. I'm running away from my own power. The thing that, you know.
Yeah.
The thing that I want to do the most. I'm literally running away from it.
It's also this sort of hoarding mentality. Because it's a guy that's like stealing some swords. And he's sneaking away. He's tiptoeing and looking over his shoulder.
Like he got away with it. Like,
and, he's clutching them like, my precious.
Yeah.
But like, it's kind of like, there's...
Are those my thoughts and feelings that I don't want to let out secretly, maybe?
Yeah, or just you don't want to expose your treasure to other people, and you're like trying to hoard it for yourself, and you're like so cautiously guarding it, and you know, like almost treating your gifts as if they are something to hide away and protect and need to be stolen away.
I'm hiding my light under a bushel.
You are this like, little light of mine. You gotta let it shine.
I guess so. Thank you, Tina Turner.
I mean, thank you, Tina Turner.
Always. I mean, always, but she—that is the beginning scene in the "What's Love Got to Do with It" movie with the great, the best Miss Angela Bassett.
Every year, she
gets better
is
and
so
better.
More beautiful. Sorry. She's so beautiful.
This is witchcraft with a dash of movie trivia. So
yeah, Angie is a queen. She can do no wrong.
All the time.
She adds gravitas and poise to anything.
Have you seen her face? Talk about treasure.
Vampire. You know, the alien robot good. Vampire. She's a vampire.
She's
for
the
sure.
best. So, all right. So seven of swords. Swords. Sneaking away. Running away from a shit. That is a fact. Then she said, pick one more card that would kind of like be the thing you need to focus on going forward. And I got six of cups. Right side up. So that's like, focus on the abundance of treasures that you have at your possession. Yeah, so basically, like, what I took away from that is, I mean, I know what I need to do. And so we had a little, like, debrief, or she asked who wanted to share, and somebody else went, and then I went. I was like, well, of course, I'm here. Why not? So I told her, you know, I kind of laughed and I was like, yeah, I knew all of this already. I said, sarcastic cards, be sarcastic. But I said, you know, like, well, she said, do you think you have your message? I'm like, oh yeah. I mean, I probably didn't need to hear it again, but I said, you know, I think it does make it more real by me admitting it aloud in a public space in front of a room full of people, like saying, I know what I'm not doing. I know that I want to do it. I know what I'm afraid of. And I said that to the entire audience. So it wasn't like I was like, it's a secret what I'm trying to talk about. No, I said it. So it's like, I knew. So whatever, we talked after the class and she was like, well, I look forward to reading about you writing about her. I'm like,
oh, shit.
That was not the thing I was writing about, but okay. I think that while I don't necessarily, you're going to can't pennies me. Like, while I don't necessarily have the academic background it would take to give a full deep dive into Hecate, who cares? Right? Just write some shit. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as we talked about last night,
if it's boring, what difference does it make?
A list of facts that I could just Google is not.
I want your UPG.
Teaching. Yes,
I want
exactly.
your unverified personal gnosis.
Yes.
I want it. Yes. So my takeaway was that I did know this already. Cards were sarcastic. I liked the group energy. I liked her energy. And then at the end, when we were doing the debrief, there was a nurse in the audience. Well, there were several nurses. in the audience, but a woman spoke up and said, you know, I'm really micromanaged in my position. I really want to like do something else. And like all these medical professionals were like, come talk to me after. It was like, it was crazy. Like all of a sudden there was like a network of people. And I mean, I know we're all here for a similar reason, but this woman like needed assistance and it was there. So it was really, I don't know, that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
That it just, like...
Well, in a very practical way, not in, like, a witchy way, but someone's, like...
Right.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about your job? I got you. Like,
well,
like,
and the thing that she said, she's an ER nurse, the woman that answered the woman that was being micromanaged, and said the thing that she focuses on and the way she can even do her job after the pandemic is to really focus on, like, warding. And, you know, for people, because she didn't have the appearance of, like, a, like, when I look at you, if I didn't know you, you have a strong ward. You walk around with it all the time, and I know it, I feel it, I think other people can feel it. This person did not emanate that energy, but as soon as she started talking, I felt it. So it was really, really neat. So that was cool. It was just a good early morning thing. I was real happy I did it.
Cool.
So that was morning.
That is morning.
Okay.
Well, after that, I went to Breed's hoop dance. It turns out it was not about hula hoops, which was kind of a bummer. But it's the Stranger's Gate coven. Several of the people involved with that led some rituals that we subsequently also went to. But so it is a ritual for Breed, the saint / goddess of the Celtic pantheon, also pronounced Brige, Breed, Bridget, and so forth. So basically the way they had it set up is we were kind of in a circle with chairs. They had a round table in the middle. They had three candles, red, black, and white, and then they had stuff at each of the corners to be the elements. They also had four symbols that are specific to Celtic tradition. They're like the weapons of Lu. It's like the spear and like the tablet of Mystery.
I don't know shit.
Yeah, okay. I don't really know either. But so there was quite an involved invocation and circle opening. They had everyone kind of scooch in and literally walked the circle with anathema. Very Wiccan-y, and that's all fine. The ring itself was actually a, like, rough-hewn, like, kind of rope-looking situation, because normally what it would be is, this tradition goes back to, they would weave a ring out of, you know, either rope or reeds or something, and they would drive cattle through it, even, to bless it. So anything that wanted to get blessed would go through the ring. So what the actual ritual, and there were several little songs that we sang to as we were doing the elements and everything, and then we went around in a circle, and so we have this hoop that's like probably bigger than an adult size hula hoop. And you had the choice, so we were all gonna go through it three times. The first time was blessings for yourself, blessings or healings for another person, and then the last time was, you know, you're invoking blessings for the community. So someone would hold the ring, and you had the choice to either point up, being like, I want, you know, kind of solar, more masculine, more active energy for this, whatever I'm wishing for. There is, you could do sideways, like a little kind of karate chop motion, which is sort of non-binary. Okay. Like, you just kind of want to, like,
neutral energy,
yeah, kind of spread it. And then you could point to the ground, and you want, you know, kind of earth energy, feminine energy coming up. So if you pointed up, the person next to you that just went takes the ring, and they hold it over your head, and, you know, they kind of shimmy down and put it on the ground and you step out of it and you kind of do a little shimmy. If it's the other way around, you point it at the ground, they set it down on the ground, you step into it, and then they pick it up and shimmy you out of it. And then the...
What if it's neutral?
The non-binary was you hold it like a lion tamer and the person walks through it like sideways. Don't take a running leap like a lion, more like a little crab walk.
Yeah, sure. Because it's only so round with people holding it. Right.
And that was very interesting. They, really interesting. For their god and goddess invocations, they would do the divine androgen and then breed and Danu, I think. So they did a god and goddess, but it's a big part because it's three main women that are kind of the organizers, and so they like to do things in threes.
Yeah.
And so that was pretty interesting that they really emphasized that.
Yeah.
And so it did take a minute.
Yeah.
I will say that one of the things that they did that was effective was they had us doing a chant where it was like, breed beside me, breed to guide me. I'm going to go through the ring three times. Breed beside me, breed to guide me. Like, my life's going to be three times better or something.
Oh. Threefold.
That's absolutely not how
threefold
it sounded.
Threefold blessings for you.
So, and then they also had, one of the members was drumming, and they had a friend, a guy who was drumming.
Oh.
And I will say one of the things that really raised the energy up is the first pass, the drummers were kind of like, oh, shit, yeah, how am I supposed to do this? I want to participate. So they would stop drumming and do it, and they were next to each other, so they would both stop drumming.
Oh, no.
So then the second pass, the drummer, she decided to hop up and keep drumming and ask for it to be, like, lowered over her so she didn't have to, like, you know,
stop drumming.
And it was kind of a rock star moment where she was like, yeah, I'm going to keep drumming, bitch.
I'm in it. I'm feeling it.
And there was a moment where we were all like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
So that, and also, you know, it kind of just kept getting a little bit faster and faster.
Yeah.
Which, so it did really build up a lot of energy. It was very cute. They then also offered everybody some apple juice.
Nice.
And some very yummy Irish soda bread that had, like, nice. Dates or raisins or something in it.
Was it Barmbrack?
Yeah, it is kind of, it was like, sort of like that. But it was really yummy.
I like that bread.
So that was super fun.
Yes.
Some of the things that sort of struck me was when you're having a lot of accoutrements that are being handed out or are being moved about or held for your ritual, like, try to make them look cool. Because, like, the soda bread was literally, like, in a Tupperware in the middle of this altar.
Put it in, like, presentation
is key.
We do
and,
love
like, the big thing of Mott's apple juice was just, like, just in there. A big jug, you know?
Yeah.
Also, one of the people presenting was wearing, you know, like, some yoga pants and then, like, a shirt or whatever and then just socks and sandals. And they put a silk or a faux silk. It was, like, not an expensive looking dress.
Not silk.
Like, a silk dress on over it, and it's wrinkled, and then, like, the you know, your tummy folds from, like, the seam of your pants and the top of your underwear and, like, the bottom of your shirt and everything.
Yeah.
Like, it just... Don't... If you're going to don a costume or something, like, do the costume.
Give it some effort. Yeah.
It really just looked like, hey, I just threw this wrinkled dress on over what I'm wearing.
I have two feelings. I like, if it would be us, like, we're doing it. We're doing the whole thing.
We're obviously doing all the pompous
stuff. Doing the damn thing. Right. But, like, I also, like, in my own personal life, like, magic rolls up how it rolls out. You are in leggings. You are in a t-shirt.
Well, and that's fine.
Like, that's,
if they just wanted
home,
to do it
right.
cash.
Right. Just where, do it cash. Right.
Yeah, just do it
but
cash.
But don't, like, do it halfway is what you're
yes.
saying. I agree.
Yes.
I agree.
That was,
Yeah.
So, those were my main takeaways from that.
I like it.
I mentioned before in our pre-trip episode that I was kind of hoping that there would be, it would be like hula hooping.
Yes.
And I was curious to see how they would adapt it for people that like have various abilities and various levels of mobility.
Right.
So that was kind of not in the mix.
Yeah. Probably good.
Yeah. I will say that going around a circle of like 30 something people three times.
Yeah.
But because they did have everybody kind of chanting and doing stuff,
it went okay.
It didn't drag out as much as it could have.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I ended up brainstorming a bunch of ideas for rituals that I would like to do.
Excellent.
And so then the next thing that we did together, or we started off together.
Well, I had a thing. I had a thing in between that.
You did?
Sorry, yeah. I went to this thing called, the hedge thing. It was called the Winding Rose of the Hedge. And this was put on by a gentleman named Ron Pedron. He is a I think second generation Cuban of Cuban descent, openly gay, and was really, really engaging. I enjoyed his discussion, which really centered around two authors. One is, sorry, Gloria Anzaldúa. And the other author was Bayo Akamolafe. I'm sure I'm destroying that. Anyway, what the talk was really centered around is, like, let's talk about hedges and what it means to be a hedge witch or a hedge rider, or, like, what does that really mean? And here's how these two authors kind of describe living in the liminal space, like living in the hedge. Like, so it was a really interesting discussion about, like, well, because a lot of times we think of the hedge as the divider, right? It's the divider between this world and the other world, or, you know, a threshold between one thing and the next, like life and death, whatever, that space in between. Well, these authors really lived as activists, as writers, in that space in the middle, like in the inside, the in between.
Yeah.
So, because I think Gloria, the author Gloria, was a queer and also lived at the border of, like, the Mexico U.S. border. So I enjoyed a lot of the thoughts, a lot of his questions were really good. We did some breakout groups about, like, how do we use like hedge in our witchcraft, and how do we confront or incorporate hedge work in your mundane life. So it was really interesting, and I was with a couple of people that did somatic energy, like, mm-hmm. healing. So it was neat to hear about their profession. One person in the group was very clinical, and the other one was more in the spiritual realm of the somatic healing.
Interesting.
So yeah, it was really interesting. And then there was a woman behind me that had a fantastic observation, and I am 100% going to date myself, but I also was too old for this show. But she said, "What about Home Improvement and how Tim, the tool man, was always talking to his neighbor Wilson, who was behind the hedge. You never saw his face. His anonymity was his wisdom."
Yeah.
Right?
Wow. He was kind of like this, like, magical, mythical being
that would just, like, sprinkle down, like, words of advice.
Because you could, if you have not seen the show,
it was real dumb.
It's pretty dumb. But, so it's this very, like, hyper-masculine tool guy, Tim the Tool Man, that had a home improvement show.
Yes.
And, right. But he's, like, so he is quite literally performing his own, like, toxic masculinity.
Yes.
But one of the running gags is his neighbor that's, like, over the fence.
Right.
Will come and talk to him. But you only ever see the top of his head.
Right.
Because he's always behind the fence.
Right.
And usually he's the one that, like, lays down some, like, truths.
Like, yeah, he's like the old wise grandpa or something. Yeah, the voice of reason. So I thought that was a really interesting and fun observation. He talked a lot about like code switching and just, you know, existing in spaces and how you can bring your like hedge activism basically into your mundane life, or how, you know, basically how to make magic out of, you know, just regular shit. And I started really thinking about my job, because that's all I fucking think about lately, and about how like I am very open about not thinking we should have to work for a living. Like, I am very open about like imagining a world without capitalism in my job, which is not a popular thought. I work in a corporate setting. Other people do not feel this way, and or they're scared to talk about feeling this way. So that's like my little like subversive thing that I kind of do, and I don't do it all the time. The other subversive thing I do is I'm a manager, which makes it even grosser, I know, but I put my people first, and I mean that. I am not kidding. Like, I would do anything for them. I would give shit up so that they could be okay. And I'm not trying to be like, oh, good on me, patting on the back. I'm just like, I see other managers that don't do that. I see them like ride their people, get mad when they're late. What I don't give a fuck. Well, take off. Who cares? This is like such a small, infinite part of your life. Like, this is literally like, if you didn't have to pay bills, you wouldn't be here. I get that. I don't want to be here either. So let's try to make the best of it.
Well, and also, like, you are stuck in this middle position of orders are coming down from the top. Yeah. You know, people are not getting paid what they're worth. Yeah. All of this corporate bullshittery.
Yes.
And they're kind of expecting you to manage the fallout of their greedy choices.
Absolutely.
And you're
and I refuse.
You sort of are like, okay, well, the buck stops here. Yeah. So I'm not going to be the, like,
right.
I'm the one that has to tell you that the higher ups have chosen to, like, not promote you or to not pay you what you're worth. But I'm not going to ask you to perform tasks that you are not being paid for or that are not in your job description.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's literally something I'm going through right now. So,
but that's incredibly subversive.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I do feel that, and I do it intentionally and with the knowledge that I am being subversive. I'm not like, I'm getting away with that. No, I'm doing it because I'm pissed off, and I have been pissed off ever since I've been in the corporate world. Like, but you know, it's just the thing I started doing, and it made enough money to live on, so I just kept doing it. Which I think is part of my other problem. But that's okay. But anyway, it was a really good... It was lecture-based, but I did enjoy the breakout groups.
Yeah, it sounds like you talked to some interesting people.
Yeah, and I liked that... I like this, and this was my... That is not my last takeaway. But I do like... I wrote down two things that I really like. Okay, I'm going to read them to you now. The gulf between social justice research and social justice activism. Mm. I do think there's a gulf, and he was talking about how he kind of decided that he would just inhabit both as best he could. And that, you know, basically has helped him to navigate a lot more things than he would have had he just stayed on one side or the other.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we all feel like we're not doing enough. And, like, that can kind of lead to feeling paralyzed. Like
fatigue,
or burnout.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I kind of got out of it, like, basically take the hedge space with you wherever you go. Because by being in that liminal space, like, as much as you can, by not staying in a box or a container that somebody wants you to stay in and to like live in the in-between, is showing people what's possible. And I really liked that.
Well, and it's also choosing when and where to show certain parts of yourself.
Yes.
By not being put in a box, you're also able to conceal certain things.
Yes.
So, because I think there's also a lot of emphasis on, like, being your authentic self or whatever. But, like, one, that's not possible at all times.
No.
And two, like, we have more than one authentic self. Yep. Like, the way I'm going to interact with people I love and trust is going to be different than people I don't know that well, or people that I specifically do not trust. So right. it's not like I'm being deceitful
right.
or concealing things from those people right. by being less candid with them.
Right.
It's that they don't
deserve that part of me right. or whatever. Right.
And so, you know, like...
They haven't earned that.
To feel like you can't, like, let your freak flag fly at work, you know, like, you've got to pick and choose, yeah. like, what... is appropriate right. and yeah. what is stifling to you or what is actually protecting you.
Right.
You know, do you feel stifled by, you know, putting a lid on, you know, your kind of political beliefs or whatever?
Right.
Or do you feel like trying to, you know, be witchy all the time at work and, like, have everybody know about it? I mean, like, maybe that's not something that they right. deserve to have access to.
Yeah.
You know, so... Yeah. So it goes both ways of right. of knowing what to conceal and what to do and to be separate things simultaneously.
Right. And that there's absolutely nothing, like, wrong with that. In fact, it's preferable.
Yes.
So I really dug that talk. And I have a lot of notes about it. So maybe I'll work that into something I'm writing. Ha ha. Oh, at 2:56 p.m., I wrote, this was in this class, I wrote, broken brain. Hecate speaks, I am supposed to write about these experiences specifically, like liminal in-between experiences specifically.
What happened at that moment?
I don't know.
You don't remember?
I don't remember. I think somebody was talking or something. Somebody must have said, like, some kind of code for it. The note right before is, choosing to be in the hedge space is a choice. The agency is what allows you to step away as well. So you're talking about that feeling of feeling kind of overextended to making you feel paralyzed, whatever. Like, making the choice to be in the liminal space is also what allows you to pull back from it.
Yeah.
So... I don't know if that's the thing that broke my brain, but...
brain is broken.
Broken brain.
256?
256. With the asterisk.
Every day at 256, I'm going to text you.
Broken brain time.
Broken brain.
Broken brain today. Oh, okay. So that was that. It was really great. I enjoyed that greatly, and I could probably talk about that for a while, but let's not.
Well, let's talk about trance dancing with the gin.
Oh, yes, let's. That was quite an experience.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. I don't even think I want to go into, like, I'm not going to read notes about the pre. We're just going to talk about what happened during.
So, I went to this at PantheaCon, and yeah. I thought it was the same person, and it was.
Okay.
And it was that one was more dance. There wasn't really, like, a slide presentation Ooh. Element. And it was really more of, like, a workshop. And so, basically, long story short, is this woman has been a belly dancer for decades, has lived in the Middle East, speaks Arabic, and has done a lot of her own, like, on-the-ground research with... like, Muslim and Arabic trance dancing, or, like, indigenous folk trance dancing. So, obviously, the most obvious would be Sufi twirling. But there's also two different kinds of private or semi-private male and female group sort of trance dance possession type things that are of varying religious orthodoxy. But anyway... Long story short is what you're doing is you are shorting out all your inputs.
Oh,
so you are physically exhausting yourself. You're also potentially hyperventilating. Yep. It's a lot of movement through the neck.
You are overstimulating your shit.
Yeah. Right. So you are whipping your head around. It's making you violently dizzy.
Violently.
There's also a lot of, like, very cacophonous, very loud drumming going on. Oh, yes. She had this amazing, amazing
belt
that was made of
goat hooves. It was the best.
She held it up and it looked like the most ancient gnarly Baba Yaga shit.
Like, I want to make one.
Like, it just
just wear it around.
So cool and hardcore.
I want to wear it to the store.
It had like so much power in it, and yeah. Then she shook it and I was like, oh fuck.
It was, yeah, that was something else. She also had, like, I know they're not called maracas, but it was like a tin can full of...
It was like a empty spray paint can.
It was like a can full of shaky shit on a stick. I mean, it sounds like a maraca, but it did not look like one. And that was loud. It was loud. It was not like soft, gentle, shaky shakes. It was fucking rattle, rattle, rattle.
Yeah, so you were overstimulating yourself with sound.
With movement.
With movement. You're basically like cutting off the air and blood flow to your brain by whipping your neck around.
Yeah. Now, in a careful way, she did start us out with like full body, like full upper body turns. You're not like just immediately gonna start whipping your head around.
Yeah, it's not from the neck, but right. That is the result.
That's the result. Yes.
So I've done this before. The last time I did it, this is what happened.
Similar results.
I was doing it because I have experienced belly dancing. I have experienced stripping. So I was, and I am into metal. So I was like, headbanging. Got it.
It's gonna be great.
Can totally do it. Yeah. Never had a problem before. So I start doing it. I'm doing figure eights with my head and getting really dizzy. And I go from fine, in the flow, feeling it, to being like, oh, wait, hold on. Walked directly outside. There was a big trash can. Puked. Then stood back up. Was totally fine again.
Went back in. Did some more?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, this time, I was really tired, still kind of recovering from my very long travel day.
Yeah.
I've also been sucking down all these cough drops, which make my throat feel good, but my tummy not feel so good. And I was like, you know what? I remember what happened last time. I'm going to take it easy. I'm going to start kneeling.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do the head whipping from my knees.
Smart.
And so I start doing that. She described there being a phase of you know, at first, like, you know, you're dancing, and then you kind of get into this flow state of you're just sort of, like, feeling your body. And then there's this tunnel state where you literally, like, the world is kind of receding. It's the feeling of being faint.
Yeah.
You know, like, when you're about to faint, you know how, like, your peripheral vision tunnels?
That's right.
And so I was feeling that, and then I was like, oh. And then she came and shook the goat hoof in my face.
Was that it?
And I was like, whoa. So I get up, except this time I'm, like, way far away from the door. So I make it to the trash can.
Oh, my God.
Bleh. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to walk down this hall to the bathroom to wash my hands. And, puked again right before I got to the bathroom, and so I had to walk back and get all my stuff, go back to the room, rinse off my clothes, because, like, I didn't puke on myself, but there was like I was like, I puked in this dress.
Yeah,
it
I'm
has
not wearing
puke particles
it
on it. And took a shower and laid down and took a nap.
Yeah, she did. So while that was happening, I was completely oblivious to any of this because I was in the exercise fully. I started out with just, like, kind of swaying back and forth. So I'm going to tell you about the part that I, like, feel like I was conscious for, and then I can sort of remember the body feelings I had while I was kind of what I think would be called in trance. So I started swaying gently. Of course, it gets faster. Then I added big arms. So I was doing big arms, big swingy arms, and then, you know, then of course my head is going, like, back on the one swing and then down on the other swing. So I'm like, I'm not going full bore, but I am not going light either. I'm not dizzy yet, and there's a point where I was still standing. And she came around with that fucking belt, and I just felt like it was on me. I don't know how to explain it, but, like, it wasn't a tunnel vision, and I wasn't feeling dizzy or faint. I was just, like, in it. Like, I was having the moment. It wasn't the ecstasy moment, because that happened in a minute. Whatever was happening, like, I think my body was like, okay, take it down one notch. And I don't know if that was my fear of being, like, sick, or what it felt like at the time was that my brain was like, hang on. It was like, like if you're having sex.
Don't do a Scarlet.
It was like if you're having sex and you're like, hey, if we stop for a minute, it'll be even better. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It was like that.
Yeah, it was trance dance edging.
Yes, exactly. So I ended up getting on my knees. And at one point, I swear to God, I was just like, just doing this, go ahead and explain whatever I'm doing. I'm like, just like bobbing up and down on my, like, not quite all fours, but like I was kneeling on my knees and my hands are on the ground and I'm just like throwing my head around and, but also like bouncing. I don't know. That's just what was happening, what was telling me to do. And I did this, she did show one move that I was actually doing where you, put your hand on the ground and lean forward, and then you put, like, in front of you, and then you put your other hand behind you and raise your hand up like you're looking, you know, you're looking up at your hand and lean back, and you do that, like, in a seesaw version. Is this, like, am I explaining this well?
Yeah, and you're kind of using your hand
as the force. Yeah. To push you off.
So you're, like, seesawing back and forth without whipping. Right. You're not using the force of throwing your head back to move you back.
So I was doing that for a while, and I feel like when I was, like, before I did the back and forth seesaw action, like, I think right before that was my moment of ecstasy, because I was, like, doing the bouncing weirdness, and that was just, like, coming from I don't know fucking where. I have no idea. I mean, spirit was in me, I guess. But then like after the seesaw action, I felt like a huge, like, denouement. Like, okay, it is the cool down time. So I basically just, like, did, like, a real quiet child pose for, like, it was like there was only, like, maybe 2 or 3 minutes of stuff dancing left. Somebody, I heard somebody fall down. The crazy thing is, I heard nothing of what was happening with Scarlett, and she was directly next to me. I did not hear her get up. I did not hear her leave. Did not hear her come back and get her things. All I know is when we finally, like, she was like, okay, I want you to lay down and kind of, like, spread out. I look over. Scarlett is disproved. She is not there. So I was like, well, I hope she's okay. Let me finish this situation. So I did. So what Scarlett missed that I really wished you could have been there for, because it was pretty cool, is she led us on a journey while we're laying there. And the journey was, you're walking on the, I'm going to do it right now. I'm not going to do it like a journey, but you're walking on the beach and you, you know, feel the sand in your feet, whatever. You come to this house. Well, for me, it ended up being a lifeguard hut, which is not a house. But you go into this, for me, lifeguard hut, and it is filled with mirrors. And there is a candle, and you can see the candle flame in all the mirrors. And you're looking in the mirror, and you're like, I couldn't hear her great, but I thought she said, you look in the mirror and you see a spirit. I don't think that's really what she said, because then there was nothing else in that whole segment that mentioned the spirit. But whatever, that's what I heard. And so I did. And it was like a guy, it was a mask is what it was. And it was like what looked to be like an African mask with tongue full out, white paint and red and white, like face paint. And like the eyes were just like, ah, you know what I'm talking about? Like just like jazzed. So that was cool and unexpected. And then she said, okay, now you're gonna walk down a long hallway. So it's a lifeguard hut. That doesn't exist. But what my mind did was make a long walkway between one lifeguard hut and another. Because, well, where I went to the beach the most when I lived in San Diego was Coronado. And there's like little, and this is true of most beaches in California, but there's a little blue lifeguard hut like every, I don't know, like 2 football fields away from each other. I don't know, 100, maybe 100 yards away. They just keep going down the beach for the
at regular intervals, right, for your exactly. safety.
So there was a long, like in the air, connected hallway of these lifeguard huts. So I walked down this long ass thing. It wasn't that long in my journey. It was not 2 football fields worth. And I get to, there's a door. And open the, what color is the door? What's on the door? So the door was like a gray, like a almost like a metal door. So like a steel door, really. And there was a like a 7 laying on its side, drawn on it in just black paint. So like you can like that. How would you describe it? A 7 laying on its side.
Yeah, like a backwards check mark.
Yeah, but yes, but the but level.
Okay.
Like the it, there's no tail. It's just like up and
yeah.
up down. Anyway, I don't know what that symbol means. And it doesn't mean anything to me right now, but I'm sure maybe it is something and I should look that up. But so then you open the door and you look around the room. What's in the room? So in this room, and my vision was like everything was black velvet, which so rad, like real cushy. Like you could just lay down in the lifeguard hut and have a nice little meditation time. There's like candles everywhere, black velvet, and a picture of my grandfather. My paternal fucking grandfather. And like, this is a man that I was not close to. He died when I was probably like 9, 10. Like, I interacted with him several times in my life, probably like 10 times maybe, because we didn't live in the same place. This is somebody that has like, I really don't have any connection to in my waking life. So, and that was literally the only thing in the room, because she was like, look at all the things in the room. These are important. I'm like, well, there's only one fucking thing for me to look at, and it's this guy. So then we like exited the room and whatever, that was that. But like, that was very weird. I need to unpack that more. I definitely had an experience during the trance dance.
I mean, I did.
You sure did. You had an experience.
I had to exercise some gin out of my body.
You sure did. Okay, then we had a very sad dinner of French fries and a wrap, which was took a very long time to receive. I went to a Faces of Freya talk with our favorite Diana Paxson. I did not stay for the whole thing, but the 2 takeaways, there were some really, just, this is a quick one because I didn't stay for the whole thing, and it was a lot of facts about Freya that I kind of already have read or something, and then I got like a message that I needed to make a phone call, so I walked out. But she said that the cats that drive the chariot don't really, they're not named in lore ever. Really? So she wrote a novel some years back, and she named them.
Oh my god, what'd she name them?
She went to a dude that knew a lot of, like, ancient Norse, and it's the words for amber and honey, which are beagle and treagle.
Beagle and treagle!
Yes, but now she's like, now the internet says that's their names. I'm like, good job, Diana Paxson! So basically, like, she invented their names.
That's so cool.
Super rad. I loved that. That was a great takeaway. And then, basically, what she was doing is she was going through the months of the year and talking about how Freya shows up in those months. So when she got to May, I swear to God, this is what she said. And this woman is probably, what, 80?
Yeah.
78? 80? She is an older lady. She goes, May, outdoor fucking begins today. I thought I died. I mean, and I am quite sure that is what she said, even though I was all the way in the back. I'm pretty sure she said fucking.
May, outdoor fucking starts today.
So that was great. I mean, I was glad that I stayed to at least hear Diana Paxson say fucking. That was good.
I was going to go to a thing, but while I was waiting to pay for my fries and everything, the thing I went to had already, was already underway, and they had closed the doors, so I took a nap.
That was great. You have napped, well.
Yes.
Then the last thing I did was this thing that I just got back from, which was already forgotten. Oh, because it started so late. This was a walk Hecate's Labyrinth, and it was quite an elaborate setup. So I give them, you know, I am sympathetic because they only had 15 minutes to try and get stuff together, and that just wasn't enough time to get everything they had together because they had a very, very intricate taped labyrinth. Like, and you know, we've taped a derby track I don't know how many times, and you know how many fucking hands that takes to get
together. Yeah, absolutely.
So. They only had the three of them. So I really liked the fact that they taped the labyrinth and they had tea lights all the way around the labyrinth.
Ooh,
so,
I bet it looked really good.
But yeah, it looked great, but the lights weren't down. I mean, they were lower, but they weren't. I wanted the lights like fucking off.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's Danger Time.
Well, but so, we've been to rituals where they had the lights like all the way down.
Yeah, I would have liked it had the lights been all the way down. But it was fine. They had a nice altar set up with offerings and everything. And then there were snacks at the end, but I could not stay. Because it was just taking, it was already 10 something and I'm like, I gotta fucking go. But anyway, so they cast a circle, which I thought was really, that was fine because we were all standing in a circle. They cast the circle and then they came around and gave us all third eyes, which I thought was super cool. It's like a little blue stick-on rhinestone. And they came around and gave us all a little blue rhinestone on our third eye. And then there was a woman in the, like, audience that had some oil that was, like, Hecate oil. I wanted, like, they were putting it on everybody, and I was like, I want to smell it first. It smelled Hecate-ish, so I was like, all right. Cool. So I put that on, and then it's, like, time to walk the labyrinth. So she does, like, a little, like, asperging with a, look like selenite or something, and says some stuff, and then they have the... The other two women were at the entrance of the labyrinth holding candles. There was a little song. The song, I will not sing it because I probably can't remember it, but I will tell you the lyrics. It is, "O Dark Mother, lead me inward, down to the cave of my heart."
Okay.
So that was pretty. I liked that. And then we walked the labyrinth. It was a little... So right out the gate... I get in the labyrinth, I kick a fucking candle across the room. That was exciting. So someone had to retrieve the one candle. This happened three times while I was...
To you?
Yes! I'm just kicking candles everywhere. I don't know what it means. I'm like, calm down.
Well, it does track that it would be three times.
Well, of course. Of course. I mean, it's almost like, is it more of the... you don't need this part message? Or is it like, kick those candles, girl? I mean, I don't know what it meant. Like, or my sandals are big. I have no idea, but...
Maybe your big Yeti feet.
My big Yeti feet were just kicking candles. Over. Like, it was a very narrow path is what I'm trying to say. No, so... I'm sorry. Before all of this happened, we had to write something down that we wanted to release on a piece of water-soluble paper. So I did write my thing... And then in the center of the labyrinth was a chalice, like a copper chalice.
Well, that's fun that there's like a little bit of cheese for the mice in the middle of the labyrinth.
There's like a fucking, there's like a prize at the end. So I dropped my little paper thing that I wanted to release into the water and kind of just like said a few like little things to myself and then walked out. But it was like, there were a lot, it wasn't like a ton of people. There was probably like maybe 25 people, but that's a lot of people in one labyrinth.
Yes.
And she was kind of timing it so people would come in and go out kind of like, so it's not too crowded, but you'd still like at some point you're on the same path with somebody. So you'd have to step out of the way and go back in. Anyway, I thought it was a great idea. I think it could have been better executed because before the actual labyrinth walking, there was quite a bit of lecture about Hecate, the labyrinths in general. And while I appreciate that setup, I think it could have been more powerful had it just been, I'm going to explain the ritual to you and we are going to do it. I think that would have been very powerful. And with the time constraints, I think it would have been fine.
Yeah, I was thinking a lot about this during some other rituals. I was brainstorming things that really are not technically a ritual, but you're just setting up a space.
Mm, yeah.
And then people kind of interact with it at their own pace.
I like that.
And so if I ever did a proposal for a convention, I mean, I'd like to do a ritual, but like I just was flooded with a bunch of ideas of stuff like that. Like, I think it would be really neat if I went to a conference, for example, and they either had like a hotel suite or one of the smaller conference rooms that was blocked out for a larger section of the day and
was like an altar.
Or was like an altar or like a space. And, you know, you could have done something like that where you had the Hecate altar and a labyrinth.
Yeah.
And maybe you had it staffed with some people or you just had, you know, an explanation that people could read or whatever.
Right.
And then people could interact with it at their own pace.
I like that.
Whenever, yeah. Or just vibe out in there. Mm. I think that that would be really cool.
Yeah,
sure. That definitely was something that they had at Pantheacon with the hotel suites where you could kind of design a space. And you could either do a ritual or a meet and greet or whatever, or it could just be something people drop by and just can quietly interact with these altars or whatever it is.
You went to one, not the one I went to with you, but there was a Santa Muerte room, right?
Yes.
And you had an experience in that room?
Yes. They did kind of a little talk and like a little devotional about what they do, but it was also just like open house.
Yeah.
So you could go and like just sit quietly. You could, sit in front of the altar. You could make offerings. They had like a little box where you could put like little wishes or notes or whatever, and they would ritually burn it in their home altar later.
Nice.
Stuff like that. But I think that it would be cool to use some of the larger spaces to do something like that, like tape out a labyrinth and let people interact with it.
You would just have to make sure your time slot was like before or after a break. Or
have it be something that's blocked out. Like, so, for example, at AllCon, which is not witchy, it's just comics and sci-fi and whatever, they have rotating conference rooms where there's, like, talks and demonstrations and classes and things. But then they also have certain smaller conference rooms that are blocked off where, like, for example, they have one where it's set up with desktop computers and they have, like, LAN gaming. And it's just open all day.
Right.
And you can just come and go at your leisure. They also had a mini golf course that they had, like, so people, they had, I guess, 18 holes, I guess. And, it was just self-serve. They just had some, like, little putt-putt guys, and then you could just kind of
do your own thing.
So, that kind of stuff, I think, could be fun. Yeah. You would have to really work with the organizers on what kind of space would be available. But I just had a ton of ideas that had to do with that. Let me tell you about my ritual that I went to last real quick.
Yes.
It was put on by Tempest and another gentleman that I don't have his name in front of me right now.
Tempest, friend of the show.
Friend of the show. It was Dion Fortune, who was an occultist from the early part of the 20th century. She was kind of involved with some of the ceremonial magic groups that splintered off the Golden Dawn. She wrote Magical Self-Defense and is more remembered today for writing a couple works of fiction, primarily The Sea Priestess. It's like... Not my favorite book, but there are these passages describing these rituals, and they are very beautiful, and you can see how people were influenced by them in the 50s when Wicca was made public, and like you had more public knowledge about people doing pagan shit. She focuses on Isis was like her home girl. She was very much into the idea of like all gods are one, all goddesses are one. So she picked kind of Isis to be this like all encompassing archetype. And then the god Pan, because you know Pan in Greek means all, of being this primordial sort of masculine archetype of the woods, of living things, of animals, and whatnot. So, apparently they have done, or this guy has done several basically historical rituals. So, you know, recreating rituals that we have documented by famous people from famous groups and just restaging them.
Nice.
As written.
Yeah.
And so, for me, it was more of an experience of doing the thing, sitting down, you know, being a captive audience as opposed to just reading something on the page and doing it in my head. And so, you know, because, I mean, we're talking about someone who was operating in the early 20th century. Not completely unproblematic, let's be real. So it wasn't like this is the greatest ritual of all time by the greatest witch of all time. But it was really fun to just do it as staged. So I really like that idea, and that just that concept really inspired me, because then I started thinking of like other kinds of historical rituals that would be fun.
To stage yourself.
Basically, long story short, is it's very, very wordy. Because they're being adapted from a novel, and some of it's just free verse, some of it is rhyming poetry. There are some kinds of like sort of repeated refrains, and they combined. I think that they combined two rituals from the Isis one from the Sea Priestess, and the one to Pan that's in another book by her. So. They, you know, read these basic, like, kind of scripts. It's very theatrical. And Tempest sort of drew down the archetype of Isis. She was wearing this beautiful, sweet belly dance kind of costume, which is it's like a sheer black fabric that real sweet is, like, very, very thin threads of silver that are beaten. They're, like, woven into the fabric and beaten down, so it's they're freaking beautiful. And then she had a veil, so there's a lot of language in the ritual about the unveiling of Isis and like looking upon the goddess, and like mere mortal man cannot look upon her without, you know, being reborn as an initiate or either like going crazy or something. So while they're reading all of this, you know, they're doing these ceremonial things, and she puts on the veil and then went around this circle of like 30 something people and just quietly offered her hands. People kind of did it at their own pace, where they would take her hands, stand up, and then peek under the veil. And have like a little moment. And I was dead last. I was all the way around at the other end of the circle. It was really powerful, and it must have been fucking exhausting for her.
Oh, I bet. For her, yeah.
Because you're having to radiate this Isis energy, which is just so...
It's very energetic.
It's super energetic, but there's like a quiet like a sort of stillness. It's very Marian, you know, Virgin Mary energy of being... very maternal, very soothing, very calming, welcoming, but also like deeply powerful, deeply poised.
And you gotta just keep
feeling very
that.
Like you feel like she's being very receptive,
right?
So that, I mean, that must have been exhausting.
I don't know that I could.
But it was really good, and I liked the idea of peeking, because there's something weird about it, you know, like
Do you think she's channeling at that time?
Yeah, I would say she's like aspecting
at least.
For sure. Definitely aspecting. But, you know, it's weird as a participant, even if it's a person that you've met before. Right. Like, it's kind of weird being you know, like, that's just sort of a weird thing. And I liked it. And it was really funny because before that we were talking about the idea of communal ritual.
Right.
And that,
like, literally right before you walked in. Yeah,
and the idea of, like, we were both saying, like, obviously, we love coming to these things, but I don't come for the community connection of, like, feeling like, oh, it was so amazing.
I'm part of all this, these people.
Yeah, and I just kind of, like, got swept up and, like, sort of lost in the crowd of the in this wave of collective energy. You know, like, that's not the high that I get. But what was interesting is it was a pretty big gathering. And but then you had this little tiny private moment that was one-on-one,
which I didn't, which I, when I reading the description, I did not think would be involved. So I'm really glad that that was a part of it for you. I'm really glad.
And then phase two was the guy, same thing. They were reading these invocations to Pan and whatnot. Oh, what helped was also while the viewing of the veiling and unveiling of Isis took a minute. They blocked it out pretty well, which is not surprising for someone that does, like, theater and dance and things. But they had it timed out really well where, because he was, while she was doing that, he was reading all this stuff about Isis and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it was good that they were able to, it wasn't
like
just
nobody's bored sitting there waiting for their turn to peek under the veil.
Right. I mean, a little bit bored, but, like,
they're engaged in listening to the dude.
There is stuff going on.
Yeah.
So, major props to getting that timed out correctly.
Well, they're pros.
Yeah. It's so, great. but it went super smoothly. So well done.
That's great.
And so then they switched. So he kind of aspected Pan.
Did he have a mask?
No, but he had, like, a little crown.
Oh, okay.
But I will say, so this guy is I don't know, kind of like flamboyant. I wouldn't say flamboyant because that's but like, I'm not thinking of him as this, like, lechy goat man.
Yeah.
But, like, he aspected hard, man. Yeah. Like, there was a point at which I saw, because there's a line that's repeated several times about being, like, a goat, a bull, a ram. And his shadow on the floor was cycling through those. Like, his shadow was, like, there's this big mass where his head would be. Like, that was, like, a big bull with shoulders. And then,
no
and then
way.
I saw, yes! Yes,
oh,
way.
Wow, that's really great.
And
wow.
And he did it really. He was very charismatic. He really transformed because, with the Isis one, obviously it was very slow and quiet and contemplative, and it's this quiet moment between two people or one person and a deity, and you know, like, Pan's like.
Was he just running around the room? Or
well,
what?
No. He kept, like, pawing with his foot. Like, he was like pawing it like a bull or something.
But did you get private moments with Pan or no?
Yes, but let me
Sorry. Okay.
Let me fucking tell you.
Shut up. All right. Tell the story.
But he got everybody chanting. He you know, Raising credit to energy. Someone that's got charisma, like they kind of change their voice and change their body posture and you're like, "Oh, I should be joining in."
Right. We're excited now.
Yeah. And so that ended with everybody approached and they had a cup of the brand Free, with one E, non-alcoholic wine.
Free.
Which is just basically, it's wine that's been, like, the
deactivated.
Yeah, so it's not grape juice. It has been fermented, but the alcohol has been removed. So, you know, they were like, just so they didn't have to do a...
Yeah.
More than one choice.
Right.
And then they had a little thing of honey, and they gave us, like, little, like, tasting spoons, like, you know, when you're at the ice cream parlor.
Yeah. Oh,
so you
fun.
Would dip it in the wine and then dip it in the honey and put it on your tongue, and it was delicious.
That's delightful.
Fucking delicious. It was definitely magically delicious.
What kind of fresh?
It was white wine. I don't know what kind, because my mom always gets some fre at, like, Christmas, because she doesn't drink.
Yeah.
And it's always super gross.
Oh,
like, I don't think it's good. But this...
But with honey. Hey.
Well, yeah, but also, you know, when you setting. Taste something in a ritual, yeah. and it's been like empowered and yes. like your senses are like
heightened.
For sure.
Yeah.
It just was like, and yeah. it, I mean, it was like a drop, yeah. you know, it was yeah, like a little, I didn't refreshing. Have like a spoon, a
scoop of, yeah, spoonful of honey. No.
So, cool. That was like kind of your little moment with Pan is he was holding the honey and the wine and, nice. He was also leading the chant that was like, I owe Pan, but he was like, argh. Like he was doing it like really low in the back of his throat.
Oh, wow.
So
that's neat.
Well done to that gentleman. He was so. I will say that the ritual as written, super wordy.
Yeah.
A lot of. I mean, it probably and also they had ambient music playing, which was really helpful.
Oh, good.
And very smart, obviously. Yeah. They had for the veiling and unveiling of Isis. They had kind of ocean sounds. Mm. Because you know the book is the sea priestess, and yeah. then for Pan. They kind of had just sort of this nature ambient sounds. Nature sounds.
Perfect.
Yeah.
That's great.
So that was really good. They also had this kind of instrument, and I don't know if you know what it's called, but it looks like a little, like, bass drum pedal, okay. kind of. But it's like a little wooden thing with, like, a little mallet on it, and you shake, you give it some force.
Like it's
like
Pappy
a chime.
Pappy has one. It's like you bang it and it goes.
No, it's not it? Like a vibra slap. It just is
oh,
a
okay.
ding.
Oh, that's not
just
what
is a ding. It okay. it's I don't know. But
I was thinking of vibra slap. So
it was not a that would have been hilarious.
Glockenspiel? Is it a glockenspiel? I don't know what a glockenspiel is or looks like. So.
I don't know. But
anyway,
and that reminded me of some of the other stuff we saw were. Having an unusual instrument
yeah.
that has a very unique ring that, yeah. that is, like, well-suited to a large space.
Yeah.
Like, obviously not something that's, like, a little kazoo or like, a triangle. Like, you need something that can resonate.
I have my mom's finger cymbals for
yeah.
belly dancing, and I also don't know how to play them, but I would love to learn how to do anything with castanets.
Yes.
Because I love the sound of castanets.
But yeah like I think in these
idea.
Group rituals, especially mm-hmm. where you're really spread out.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like kind of sitting and waiting.
Yeah.
Having these musical cues, especially ones that are unusual.
Yeah, it's good.
It really is a signal to your brain that like which time is happening.
Shit is happening, right.
Yeah. Whether it's like a singing bowl or a bell or mm-hmm. A shaman's drum or and it doesn't have to be something that's playing constantly.
Right.
Although I will say in one of the other things I went to, somebody was, I think it was maybe the breed one where someone was walking the circle and saying something and they had one of those
twisty shakies
is like
that totally has a name and we're gonna call it twisty shaky.
Yeah. Thank you, person that's married to a percussionist.
Oh, I fucking know. He's a drummer. Let's get something straight. There's a difference. But yes, he probably knows all the names of these things, and I'm just like, twisty shake.
The shaky
anyway,
it was going so that when she was done and she stopped, because it's a very kind of white noise sound.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a ding, 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 ding. It was like, you know, like an ocean kind of sound. So that when
right.
it stopped,
you
feel
it.
It.
Yeah.
Your body has this sense of like, huh, you know,
yeah.
like, so
yeah.
that's something that just in general, I want to remind myself.
Yeah.
To play around with in ritual is if there's a sound element,
yeah.
it really enhances it. Even if it's just one little chime to let people know, like, oh, we're coming out of trance, or
yeah.
oh, the circle is cast, or
yeah.
oh, it's over. You know, just like little moments like that, I think make it really unique, and
yeah.
you sense it, like you feel it through your body.
I do it in my everyday. I mean, not every day, but in my normal practice, I use a bell. I use the singing bowl, like I use it to, you know, it's a cue, like you said. That's cool. Like,
yeah. So
did you like it?
I think they executed it really well for what it was.
I'm glad you went to it.
No, it's definitely one of those things. Like, I'm glad I went to it
yeah.
because I would probably never sit down. I on my own would not stage, you know, rituals that are featured in Dionne Fortune's nonfiction or fiction writing.
Right.
And
but it was very witty to see it. Yeah.
But to see people that were really good at like blocking and staging something as written, you know, I mean, it's very theatrical. Like you're adapting a script.
Right.
And again, I will say that the ambient music was a really good touch. Having people chant while they're sitting around and waiting.
Great idea.
Was really good. Sure. It definitely makes people feel like they're still doing something and participating. Obviously, it's a trance induction technique, so it definitely gets you in the mood. That was really good. You know, timing out your ritual and being able to scale it. I'm sure they had no idea how many people were going to be there.
It was a lot.
Yeah, it was over 30 people at least. It was 30 to 40 people.
Yeah.
So knowing that Tempest is going to be going around to each individual person, it's going to be at least 3 or 4 seconds per person.
Yeah.
And timing that out, and, you know, if it had been a dozen people, you know, what... they would have had to kind of adjust. They would have had to scale the amount of stuff that Home Dude was reading while she was doing this.
Sure.
Because you don't want to have a logjam in either case, where either everyone's waiting for their turn with the goddess, and then it's just silence and nothing's happening and no one's vamping. Or conversely, Isis time gets done really fast, and then that's over, and now we're just back to sitting there hearing someone read.
Right.
So,
important things that I don't know that I would ever think about. So, yeah that's great.
I was thinking about, you know, just stuff like kind of visually dividing up the room. Mm. You know, if you have people in a circle, it's very easy. You can kind of just divide it up into fourths and just sort of, like, mentally in your notes. If you have a block of text, like, have something on that script that denotes kind of a midpoint so that as you're reading it or as you're doing it, you can kind of pace yourself, you know?
It would be also really neat to do in a larger group what we used to do, just the three or four of us, where if we're reading something, you just chime in a word every now and then, like a word that comes out to you. That would be, I think, really powerful in a larger group setting.
Yeah.
So that's something to think about too. Yeah. I enjoy feeling being part of the thing that's being read. Like, not, I think it's like probably harkens back to Catholicism where I love call and response, but like, I think it's fun to, you feel included in the conversation. And I think that's that's the feeling I want. I mean, and also my private moment with Isis. I do want that as well. But yeah, that sounds great. I'm really glad you went to that.
So I have a bunch of random notes about rituals that popped into my head of things that I would want to try or whatever.
Okay.
But I'm going to save that for later.
Save it.
I feel like we are running on fumes.
Are we almost at two? No.
We're 1:40.
Yes, it's time to go. Time to let you all have your lives back. Thank you so much for listening. This was day two, and we will be back with day three.
Hocus pocus, bitches.
That's right. See ya.